Welcome back to the Grass Sucks Grow Food podcast. My name's Cody.
And I'm Ariel.
And we are the owners of Ursa and Vixen Seed Co. Today we're going to be talking about five things that we think we are going to do differently that we have either tested or seen fail completely this year that we're going to completely change next year.
Yeah. And so if you haven't seen any of our podcasts yet, we did take a pretty significant break over the bulk of the summer and like busier months for us. And so now that the garden is kind of, you know, all wound down and, you know, just, you know, put away for the winter, then, you know, we have a little bit more time on our hands to devote to, you know, the podcast again. And hopefully we can, you know, keep up with it better this time, because I think our last one was in June or July.
Yeah, it was. So.
Little bit of a break, wee break, but we're happy to be back and talk to everybody. And, you know, we'd love to know, you know, afterwards, you know, what you would do differently in your garden versus this year, or what you want to try for next year. Or if you're a beginner or for, you know, first time gardener, any questions that you have about, you know, any of the methods that we're talking about today and how we can help you be more successful, you know, in your garden for next year.
So the first thing that we've talked about that we 100% agree on is diversifying the rows and interplanting.
Yeah. So I planned down to like the inch every single part of our garden this year. And then, I mean, it was a great plan, like grid paper, everything.
Wonderful.
But as we got into it and we were transplanting tons of starts and direct sowing tons of things, it just became kind of overwhelming. And so I kind of ditched the plan halfway through, and which is fine. You don't have to have a plan for your garden. You can just kind of plant.
You do need things. Starts. That is one thing that's very important.
Yeah. Don't forget to start your seeds early. That we're coming up on seed starting season.
Starts, but you don't necessarily need a plan.
Right. But so like there's obviously like, you know, if you follow any companion planting, there are certain things you don't want to plant next to each other just for fungal or, you know, like disease reasons or pests even.
This book is great. Carrots Love Tomatoes, a great companion planting book that makes it very simple.
Yeah,
and I like that it does talk about the nutrients side of things and what certain plants use more nutrients and then certain plants use less of.
Right. Yeah, that's a great read. I actually picked that up while thrifting one day, so you could probably find it used or check it out at your local library. But yeah, another one we would definitely recommend. But so for me, with my garden planning that I did this year, I did more of like what I had grown up with, which was more, you know, almost what I think is like just kind of like a
traditional rows,
and everything was kind of grouped together, you know, with like things. So all of our tomatoes were in one bed. We had all the corn, you know, we did do a little bit of Three Sisters planting, but like all the kale was separate and my other brassicas were separate. But what we found is we did struggle with pests this year. And now we expanded our garden a ton from last year. So
I think we tripled the space, if not more.
You know, we had not had to deal with a ton of pest issues last year and before that. So this time, you know, we had these newly established no-dig beds. And
which grew great.
Yeah, they did awesome. Because, I mean, if you followed, you know, if you followed along with us or have looked back at our, like, earlier posts, you would have seen some content about how we put those in our backyard straight on top of grass. And they did fabulously. We had great yields from our garden this year. And I was a little worried about all of the grass, which, I mean, as far as like weeding goes, you know, like
you definitely have to weed more.
We had a ton, but with
more
the new,
than established beds.
Right. So that is expected with a newly, a new no dig bed.
Yeah.
I found that, you know, since we did not do as much interplanting or diversifying like our rows and stuff, we didn't utilize the space as well as we could have. And I found like we actually ended up with some empty spacing that, you know, I was running here and there trying to plant things, you know, interplant as we went along. But I know we can do better next year.
Which diversifying rows just means that you're not planting like things together. You're spreading out your brassicas, your greens, your tomatoes. It's not all in one row. It's all over the place. And it actually creates a better environment for them to grow.
Right.
Because it one time, you know, one can act as a trap crop, as in the insects go to that one over mm-hmm. the others. And then obviously crop rotation is super important as well.
Right. And so I know, like, you know, especially with like our summer squash, you know, I mean, who doesn't deal with squash bugs? You know, it's just, they are evil. But
unless you grow trombocinos.
Unless you grow trombocinos, which we're going to try and see if they can beat the squash bugs next year. But so seeds will be coming for those next year. But for our summer squash this year, they were all planted together. You know, we had marigolds planted in there and stuff, but and like collards, but I didn't have like a ton of interplanting, and we like that was probably the biggest hit that we had mm-hmm. from the pests. That, and then it actually happened on the opposite side of our garden with our winter squash. Same thing. No interplanting there, just all the winter squash together. And we had some significant pest issues. And so you know,
with the watermelons.
They weren't as bad.
They weren't as bad until later into the season.
Right. We had some pretty good watermelons, but...
yeah, right there at the end, though, that's when the pests really started right. showing
and
up.
So we,
and then they clustered.
We did even plant later in the season. I think it was, like, almost July or, you know, even beginning of July when I started planting, like, the pumpkins and stuff. And we still did not miss all the squash bugs. We did miss a lot of the vine borers because... Yeah. I think they only have like one or two generations and then they, you know, like they're done for the season. So that is like a tip, you know, if you are struggling with the vine borers, then maybe plant your cucurbitas later in the season, and they grow really quickly. So that's not, you know, something to really worry about. But we still had a lot of pest issues. So,
yeah.
You know, going forward, you know, how can we, you know, change things so that we, you know, get better yields off of our all of our cucurbitas. And so one thing would be that we're going to try is the diversifying of the crops and having them separate instead of losing everything all together
yeah.
in one spot.
Yeah.
So.
And interplanting. And again,
yeah.
it's just filling all of the space.
Yeah.
More food is better than less food.
Right.
And
we, you know, Cody did a TikTok not that long ago talking about how spacing in the garden is not a hard rule. It's
yeah.
more just a guideline. And so with interplanting, we've had some questions about interplanting.
Especially with different root depths.
Right. So you can interplant things quite closely together and, you know, increase your, you know, the amount of things that you can grow
yeah.
in a smaller space. And so that's absolutely something that we will... You know,
and
a lot more of.
If you have things that are going to come to like full, they're going to be done.
Yeah, that you'll harvest
earlier.
Yeah.
Then you can intersow, you know, after the fact. So you can plant your first thing, whether it be.
Yeah. So sort of succession sowing.
Yeah. But just succession sowing through different varieties or different
types
of food.
Right. So we did do that with our, we planted radishes under all our tomatoes
yeah.
and our radishes were harvested by the time the tomatoes even overshadowed them. And so that worked out.
That worked great.
That worked out pretty great.
And the collards probably should have been on the outside of the tomatoes versus
yeah,
the inside
again,
of the tomatoes.
I need to switch up the way I, you know, plan things, but yeah. And
but they did good too. I mean, as far as collards were concerned, they
right.
did all right.
Yeah, we actually had some pretty good successes this year. Like, we were pretty proud of ourselves because, you know, with the newly established no-dig beds, and especially since no-dig was a new method that we were trying, we were concerned, you know, and, you know, it actually did fabulously, so.
So, for sure, diversifying our rows and interplanting a lot more to get more food out.
Yeah.
And that... succession
more,
sowing.
Yeah,
more
efficient. More
succession sowing,
use
more efficient.
Of the space.
Yeah. Mulch earlier and mulch heavier.
Yeah.
This was something that I think we were both confused about because mm-hmm. we were worried about root rot, about root
well, it's,
rotting
it,
the
it
base.
Kind of just got down to time issues
yeah.
and we were you know, we have two small children, so, you know, it's just the two of us here, so we did get a little overwhelmed at certain points in the garden
but,
with weeding and with, you know, direct sowing and stuff. And so
you weed less if you mulch heavier,
right? So we just used straw mulch, chopped straw mulch that what is it called,
I don't know, but it has
it's
99.9%
it
of the seeds taken out.
Yeah, so it doesn't have all the weeds, like,
it's not hay.
In there.
It's not hay. Don't use hay. There are people that use hay.
Yeah.
Don't use hay. It has a bunch of seeds.
So, yeah, you can get this. They're like bales, plastic-covered bales at Home Depot or Lowe's for pretty cheap. But So we did use that in a lot of areas of the garden. And then there were some areas like our corn where we did not mulch and we should have.
Yeah.
And that was just because time got away with us. The corn grew super fast. And I did not want to cover up the beans that I had planted below the corn, you know, because we planted them afterwards. And so before we knew it, it was already later in the season. And I was like, oh, crap, we should have mulch that, you know, sooner, to, you know, help with that moisture retention and with the weeds. And so,
which we did that with the watermelons and it did great.
Right.
We didn't have near as many weed problems in the watermelons, and we actually watered less than what I think we would have.
Right. And with our tomatoes as well, you know, tomatoes need consistent watering to prevent cracking and stuff. So
again, another mulching really helped there. We had a lot less cracking than I think we would have. Because of how random the rain was this year.
So, yes, mulch, definitely mulch earlier. You want to wait until, your seedlings are at least a few inches tall so that, you know, you can mulch around them and not cover them up, you know, cover up any of the true leaves that are growing. So, you can use,
mulch there's heavy.
You can, and by heavy, we mean, you know, like
thicker layers,
thicker, of mulch. You know, like you don't want it to cover up the plant and you also don't want to get it too close to the stem of the plant because you don't want to, you know, get any root rot.
I think the main issue that we ran into is you have to wait until the plant is more established before you start mulching closer to it. So maybe we should just put the mulch down and then creep the mulch in as the plant starts to become more established.
But again, simple fix, you know, something that, you know, we just have to remember for next year's garden.
And it's going to help. I mean, if you're a beginner gardener, mulch more than you think you need.
Mm-hmm.
We were putting in like, you know, thinner layers because that's just what we're used to. But the thicker layers definitely do matter and definitely do make the difference.
You will retain the moisture that way, which is watering less, you know, more consistent, you know, moisture in the soil. And that's better all around for any crop you're going to grow.
And less cracking on tomatoes. Yeah. That was another big thing because the cracks can lead to pests getting into your tomatoes and actually eating them.
Yeah. Or bacteria.
So. Or bacteria. Yeah.
Yeah.
Number three, schedule fertilizer better.
Yeah.
I just came up with the 1 in 15.
Yeah.
1 in 15 keeps your plants green.
Yeah. So fertilizing every 2 weeks. So, saying, the 1st and the 15th were an easy way to remember that. And we use the seaweed or kelp fertilizer.
We have bone meal too.
We have bone meal. And you can use, you know, the fish fertilizer is a good one. Anything that's going to have, you know, kind of a well-rounded amount of...
I think I'm
going
to start the tomatoes on a blood meal first.
Okay, yeah.
To establish that and then also have the bone meal mixed in. I might do a blood meal, bone meal mix.
We'll have to see. Well, we might have to do another podcast on fertilizer.
Yeah.
We had done one, I think, a while back. But so fertilizing more regularly will definitely help your plants. You don't want to do that, you know, more often than that. And if you've, you know, noticed that it's been too long, then it's, you know, it's never too late to at least throw some fertilizer on there.
Yeah. And the point of the fertilizer, especially with the organic fertilizer, is you're feeding the soil over and over. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily feeding the plants. The plants are receiving all of the macronutrients that they need from the soil. Mm-hmm. And so the organic fertilizer, you have a little bit more leeway with. So when you plant your plants in the ground, so you plant your starts in the ground, you can actually fertilize right then, which usually you wouldn't do with a
synthetic
fertilizer because it would, you know, just dump all of the macronutrients into that plant
and it might burn it.
Yeah.
Burn your tender plant. So organic fertilizers all the way. We do 100% organic, you know, growing in our garden.
And
no pesticides really, but I was going to say very little, but
we have zero.
We use BT when needed, and BT is organic as well. So,
yeah,
and totally natural. Organic. Yeah. Okay. So, more consistent watering schedule. So, we did have a lot of rain this summer. And again, with the mulching, this will help. But just being more consistent with watering that will definitely help. And I mean,
I don't know if it's even more watering, it's more checking.
Yeah. More checking because, I mean, you can think, oh, I need to water my garden every day, but you don't actually have to because...
Especially if you mulch thick.
Right. So if you're, you know, if you just stick your finger in the dirt, we joke about it, just stick a finger in it.
Just 1 inch in, I mean,
yeah, or first up knuckle. To, yeah, up to your first knuckle and just, you know, check and see if you feel moisture in the soil. It's similar with houseplants, you know, it's kind of the same thing. You know...
Well, kind of.
But... you don't want to overwater and you don't want to water too, you know, shallowly too frequently because it'll actually help the root depth and growth of your plants if you water deeper and less.
Which means thicker stalks, thicker root systems. Yeah,
and just healthier plants.
Healthier plants all around. And that means bigger plants, which is also a great thing because that means more fruit.
Yeah. So, so we'll kind of, you know, just do better about checking that next year. So.
And we're also going to start introducing more watering options like soaker hoses.
Yeah, that was something, you know, with the size of our garden, we absolutely, it's hard to do it by hand.
Well, we didn't know that increasing the size that much would have increased the amount of watering that we had to do.
Well, I mean,
all over the place.
I knew, but.
But you didn't really know.
I mean, we have, you know, two hoses on a splitter, you know, from the spigot. So, but still, I mean, it took a significant amount of time for us to water everything, especially if you're watering, you know, at the base of the plants and to not, you know, wet any foliage and stuff. So that is something, yeah, using some soaker hoses, we're definitely going to be doing that.
Which a soaker hose is just, it's just a hose.
Holes.
Yeah. Well, it's a...
or the...
It's like a mesh material.
Permeable, yeah. So, but
and it just slowly lets out the water over the whole row.
Right. And so drip irrigation is another one that we might look into doing.
Yeah.
We want to, you know, check out a few different methods and see what we like best.
So there's a lot of options. And then, of course, for the raised beds, you have a lot more options, which is weird because you can do soaker hoses. You can do the small sprayers.
Mm-hmm.
You can do quite a few different things. The reason that you can't do that necessarily on the in-ground beds is because you can step out on
it. Right. The majority of our garden is in-ground, and we only have a couple little raised beds.
Yeah.
And, so it's something, and especially and with no dig, this is one fact that not a lot of people know, you can step on the beds.
Yeah.
Because like with raised beds or, you know, even a tilled garden, you want to, refrain from stepping on all the beds where you have everything planted because you don't want to compact the soil. But with no dig, it's actually totally fine. You're not compacting because your, you know, top few inches that you have, you know, layered is all compost and it's not going to compact
the soil. You're stepping on a barrier, basically.
Right.
You're not stepping on the soil. The topsoil, you're actually stepping on that barrier of compost.
And again, if you want to learn more about no dig, you know, more in depth, Charles Dowding is, you know, the no dig, you know.
There's a lot of people in the
guy, you know, a lot of people, you know, use this method, but he's got a lot of information.
We also have a couple different videos on no dig as well.
Yeah.
If you want to go back and check out that, this I think has a small caveat of soil types and what they have to do with watering. So if you're a beginner gardener and you're watering maybe clay soil or sandy soil, or if you're lucky enough to have, you know, the great topsoil that we have, surprisingly.
I mean, we're in the Midwest, so.
You know, we're lucky enough to get that.
Yeah, we are in the middle of farmland, and so there is a lot of farming around us, so,
but you know. If your soil is, whether it's dead or clay or sandy, your watering and the way that you water varies.
Right, and so that's something you just have to kind of keep an eye on and maybe, you know.
Yeah.
Look at your soil, look at what type you have. There's a lot of ways you can, you know, look up online and how to determine what soil type you have or, you know, get your soil tested by your local extension office.
There's really easy ways to just go in and just, you know, make a small hole and feel the soil and feel what
you can ball it up in your hand. Yeah. And it has more clay and stuff. So, but yeah, you're right. Yeah. It does depend. So it will vary a little bit, but yeah.
So still. More consistent watering for us may not necessarily be the case for you. If you have clay soil, you do not need more consistent watering. You need deep watering, and then you need to check it constantly.
Yeah.
And if you have sandy soil, you need more consistent watering.
Right. And you don't want to oversaturate.
Yeah.
Because that does lead to fungal issues as well, and your plants are not going to be happy. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So last, number five, we have better crop protection. So this kind of goes back to what I was saying in the beginning about having pest issues and stuff. So, and again, it's just one of those things where you don't really know how bad the pests are going to be until you're in the middle of it. And because some people don't struggle with, you know, certain pests in their areas, you know, their regions. And we did find that our brassicas got hit pretty hard with cabbage moths. So, and then I think it's the pickle moth, I want to say. They have like a little striped caterpillar, almost
An right inchworm. There at the end of the season.
Yeah, they came right at the end of the season and just like destroyed the brassicas, mostly the collards and the kale. And so I was a little late getting protection on, you know, like some insect netting on some of those brassicas. But I did start out like with my cabbage with the netting over it, and we had some beautiful cabbage. So that is definitely something if you are struggling, you know, with pests and you have, you know, something like a brassica that doesn't have a flower that needs to be pollinated, then insect netting is going to be your best friend. And it's going to be my best friend next year because I'm going to buy a ton of it.
Insect netting, hoops.
We might do some little, the floating row covers on the hoops even, that
the bird netting was super useful.
Oh yes, birds and squirrels. We have battled them a lot. And what's funny,
our own birds,
our chickens. Yes, they
in the chicken garden.
Yeah, over on the side of the garden where we have the chickens, we have some beds that have just 2 foot tall chicken wire fencing around it. And for the most part, our older chickens, they did not care, you know, to even bother with it. Yeah. They won't jump. They're not going to mess with it. But our newest set of chicks that are now, you know, young pullets, they are smart and they have figured out how to use the marigolds planted around the fencing to hop over, to climb and hop over.
Yeah.
So they get in there and they destroy everything. So bird netting will absolutely be added over the top of those beds next year. And we do have it over our raised beds, and that has helped tremendously with the squirrels. Yep. They really like to get in there, and they will find any hole to, you know, try to wiggle in and go dig and eat all your little tender greens and stuff. They even try to get into our garlic this fall.
They eat seeds, they eat greens.
Well, and
they
eat anything. And they're more just destructive because they dig. Yeah. And so I've had a lot of like little lettuce seedlings totally uprooted and destroyed because of squirrels, and birds come and eat any little green thing they see, you know, if you have it planted in a bed. So definitely bird netting. 100%. Yeah. And the pollinators can still get in. So that is helpful.
That is, that's the best thing. The pollinators can still get in. They can still pollinate. Not that you're pollinating your greens.
No, but if you're having issues with squirrels and birds with like your tomatoes and stuff, we did not see any problems with that this year, but.
No, but they're in the middle. So those are actually in the middle of our yard. They're not closer to the edge where our larger canopy is.
Right. So, yeah, and this is just, you know, kind of, this is all just things that we've kind of, you know, just figured out as we went along and, you know, that we, you know, realized, oh, we need to switch this up next year. So, and we had a similar list from last year that we were like, okay, let's, you know, fix these things this year. One of those was like more diligent about, you know, keeping up with our compost.
Yeah.
And we did that. And we've actually, you know, had some good compost come out of there that we were able to use. And so, you know, that's something we're going to be able to continue to, you know, work on and do. And I mean, you know, it's good to kind of write these things down as you go through the season, and or at least make mental notes and
write it down.
You're not
going to make mental notes.
You're not going to remember. I'm not going to remember.
Someone might, but they're going to be happy that they write it down.
It's not me. So, but it is helpful to have it at least written down, you know, just a little note just to remember. You know, I do keep a garden journal even to know, you know, like, this did not work for me this year, and this is what I can change for next year. But, I mean, it doesn't mean that you've, you know, like, for us, we don't consider, you know, ourselves failing at certain things, but it is sad in the moment to, like, lose an entire crop of something. Like, for us, like, the winter squashes and pumpkins.
We got quite a few winter squash. We got the little green UFOs. We got the yellow UFOs. No, that was the
summer squash.
Oh, you're right.
No, the winter squash. It was just decimated. And so, you know, that was sad. No pumpkins this fall. So, that, you know, in the moment, you know, I felt like a failure, you know, with that at least. But, you know, I know that, you know, we can try something else.
Yeah.
You know, next year we're going to try something else and just see what works and maybe try some different varieties and, you know, see what we can do. But, yeah, so let us know, you know, if you have any questions about anything we talked about today, if there's any, you know, input that you have or things that, you know, we struggled with that, you know, you might have some tips for us even.
So again, we'd love to hear. The five things we were talking about are diversifying rows and interplanting, mulching earlier and heavier and thicker, scheduling fertilizer better, more consistent watering, and better crop protection.
Yep. So, you want to finish this?
This has been the Grass Ducks Grow Food Podcast. My name's Cody.
And I'm Ariel.
And thank you so much for watching. If you have not checked us out on Instagram or TikTok, we would love to have you check us out there. We post content regularly.
Yeah.
You can also check out our website at ursaandvixen.com.
Yeah, we've got lots of heirloom varieties, always, you know, open pollinated, non-GMO, you know, not that that's a topic for a different day, not that that matters.
Heirloom, non-GMO, high quality seeds.
Yeah.
All right. At ursaandvixen.com. Thank you so much for watching or listening. We'll see you next time.